intergenerational work. And I'm going to start with noting that for some generations, here's one of their generational differences. For some generations, all caps means it's important. And for other generations, it means I'm shouting at you. So apologies for that. I'm not shouting at you, but it is important. So hopefully we can have our own intergenerational moment here as we get started. So for this particular training, the goals are for you to be able to summarize generational differences between baby boomers, Generation X, millennials, and Gen Z, and how they manifest in the workplace. I am not including at this point the Generation Alpha. Those folks are generally 22 years old and younger, so they're not likely to show up as employees yet. Plus, we don't know much about them because they're just getting started as adults in the world. So we're going to stick with these four generations for right now. The second one is to compare differences between generational communication styles and then to apply communication techniques in management. So that's where we're going with that. A little bit about me. I've met some of you before. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and board certified business and organizational psychologist. I work independently, and I also work with UCLA and DMH for a while now. And I love it. Love working with you all. I've worked in a lot of different service delivery programs through nonprofits, through the military, federal government, universities, and of course, our favorite state and county health departments. So lots of opportunities to learn how things work well, how things work not so well, and to apply that to mental health, substance use, and social services. And then I do a lot of work related to intergenerational communication. I'm editor and publisher of the Millennials Guide series, and I've written some books with and by and about millennials. So very excited to talk with you about this today. So first want to get started with what our agenda is. So we're going to talk about the concept of generations and what are generations. I think most of you know what those are by now, but we'll have a quick review. And then we'll talk about the current generations, the four I just mentioned, and implications for how the different generational approaches might display themselves in the workplace. We'll talk about communication and conflict at work, and then we'll talk about some strategies. So what I want is for you to leave with a better understanding of intergenerational communication and some specific strategies for how to work with people who may be of different generations than you are. So let's start with the historical moment here. So Carl Mannheim was the first sociologist interested in the problem of generations. So prior to the 1950s, a generation was considered everyone in a family unit. So grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, kids, that was considered a generation. And now generations are considered quite differently. It's a social position, whereas people who are in the same age group share certain characteristics and values. So even the notion of what a generation is has changed over time. And in general, generations have commonalities around a shared temporal location. So a shared location in time where you experienced certain things by virtue of your age. The second is a shared historical location. And we'll talk about some of those historical events that have influenced generations and how they see the world. So exposure to the same historical events. And then finally, a shared sociocultural location, which can be generational consciousness. There was some baby boomer pride back in the day, Gen X, no pride. I'm Gen X, so I tease our generation quite a bit. But some consciousness of who you are as a generation, as well as some of these social and cultural advances that may happen. And we'll talk about those in just a moment as well. So a generation is not, because you're part of a generation, that does not mean you are definitely all of those things. I have heard from many, many millennials and Gen Z who say, I'm not even good at technology, but people think I am because of my age. It doesn't mean that everything's foolproof. It means there are some generalities. And with those shared experiences in time and history and culture come generalities that could be helpful in understanding each other in the workplace. So that brings us to today. So we have Five generations that we'll talk about. So the traditionalists are the oldest ones in the workforce. So this would be my mom for anyone who's counting there. So these are folks that were born before 1945, pre-baby boomers. We have the baby boomers that were born in the baby boom after the World War II up to 1964. We have Gen X, of which I am one. We were born between 65 and 79. We have millennials who were born between 1980 and approximately 1997. Some people say 80 to 2000, but basically these are people who came of age around the turn of the millennium. And then we have Gen Z, which was born after 1997, and then probably Gen Alpha is around people born 2020 and later. So these are still young people who are not here yet. So let me start with be respectful. What are stereotypes about each group? And I've got the chat open here. So any stereotypes you can think of around traditionalists or baby boomers, put them in the chat. I'd be surprised if you say something I haven't heard before. So, for example, one of the examples of stereotype about baby boomers is that they're hard workers. Another is that, yeah, absolutely unwilling to change, old school, dependable. Absolutely. Back in my days, absolutely. All baby boomers are smokers. That is one I have not heard before. So there's a lot of characteristics that we attribute to that group. Whether we fully believe in the idea that generation is destiny or not, which I don't think it is. Gen X, this is my group here. What are stereotypes or beliefs about Gen X? From my perspective, we are invisible. We are not people who generally speak up in the workplace. So what do you have? Privileged, apathetic, lost on purpose. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, all about work, latchkey kids, totally. Yes, and I relate to many of those things, so thank you for that. So there's that. Millennials, what do you actually let's put millennials and Gen Z together. What are stereotypes about millennials and Gen Z? So one I mentioned earlier, we have it easy, that lazy, yep, that they know everything about technology. Overly sensitive, yeah, complainers, entitled, ruin everything. How many articles have you seen about all the things millennials and Gen Z have ruined? Jeans and avocado toast and mortgages and everything. Yeah, lots of stereotypes and beliefs about each group. Okay, yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. So there's a lot going on here. There's a lot going on. And I'm sure as some of you are reading these things, the stereotypes about your own generation, you're saying, hey, that doesn't apply to me, or that's not very nice, or I can't believe people think that about me personally. It's not about you personally, but it is something that's important in the workplace that can affect you. As a Gen Xer, if I say I'm Gen X in the workplace, people might think I'm personally apathetic. I am not apathetic. Anyone who's met me knows I'm not. They will know that I am not lazy. I'm also not all about work. I might be a little sensitive as you're adding that in here, but it's natural to have that kind of affinity for making generalizations about people because of the generation they're in, and also feeling somewhat defensive about those generalizations not applying to me personally. Yet we all do it. So, and thanks for your comment. Every millennial and Gen Z I know is working a side hustle and is working really hard. So that one, the lazy part, I don't see it, but I'm sure it's true among some. Okay, so let's walk through what these characteristics of generations are. So let's start with the traditionalists. These are folks who came of age during the Great Depression, active in World War II. My mother was born during World War II. These are folks that are generally considered to be disciplined, to have a lot of workplace loyalty, and the big technological advance during their age was vaccines. Unfortunately, we come back to that in recent times, but vaccines for polio and several other illnesses were quite a big deal and a life changer for people who were injured. And disabled due to those illnesses. So baby boomers came of age during the era of Vietnam and the moon landing, civil rights, women's rights. They are generally seen as being experimental and being innovators and being hardworking. And the technology that came of age when they were there was the personal computer. Now, they were born around 1964, so we're looking at like 1980s personal computer, which did not have anywhere near the computing capability of probably our watches these days, but it was a very, very big deal at the time. The personal computer and the idea that people could have that technology at their fingertips was a very big deal. Generation X, my group here, we came of age during the fall of the Berlin War, fall of the Berlin Wall, and then the Gulf War. We're generally seen as independent and free agents. And also, our technologies, for what they're worth, are internet, MTV, AIDS, and mobile phone. So AIDS is not really a technology, but those are some of the things that we came of age during. I clearly remember the pre-email days, and yes, it was a bit of a challenge. So those are what happened for us. Millennials came of age right after 9/11, and are generally seen as involving a lot of community service, social awareness. They want things now. I totally relate to that. And they are seen as being confident, taking diversity as a given. So often quite surprised at some of the diversity initiatives because they just assume everyone that expects diversity and respects diversity. Very much social everything, and they came of age during Google and Facebook as the technology for their generation. And then for Gen Z, they came of age during the pandemic and often seen as optimistic and also having high expectations. A lot of apps, a lot of social games, and then their technology has been Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok. Probably starting to get into AI. We'll see how that goes, the artificial intelligence, although that might be more of a generation alpha thing, and we'll go forward. You might notice there is a Gen Z, millennials, and Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z. Millennials were originally called Gen Y. Some places still refer to them as Generation Y. So if you see that, and I don't know if we're going to go through the whole alphabet at this point, but hopefully we can get more creative as we go along. So these are the general characteristics of generations. Any feedback, any thoughts on these? If you're looking at your generation, does this seem accurate to you? Got one thumbs up. Yeah, seems pretty accurate. Okay, great, great, great. Okay, so now let's look at how does this move forward? How does this work? And as far as applications to the workforce. So traditionalists, this is where we start getting into how people are viewing the world differently because of their experiences in general. So traditionalists, the earliest group, they tend to value authority and top-down management. They have tended to be hardworking and they expect everyone to work hard. And by working hard, that often means the butt in chair model of working hard, not working from home. That's not really working, having your butt in the chair, being at the office when the lights come on and staying until the last moment, which is obviously a big difference as we start looking through these. Also kind of a make do or do without kind of group, kind of expect people to suck it up, which again creates some challenges as we keep going through these. The baby boomers generally expect deference to their opinions. Remember, their parents were the traditionalists who valued that authority. And so they expect, all right, I'm an older person now, you should respect my opinion. And again, that's not necessarily how things work for all generations. They tended to be workaholics, and they also came of age when more work meant more benefit. Most of the people who are baby boomers worked in organizations where they got a pension. Things were guaranteed. By the time they hit 62 or 65, they had a pension for the rest of their life, not like kind of most Gen X and later, where our money goes in the money market, our retirement plans go in the money market, and if there's a crash, we really get the short end of the stick. So very different situation that led to them becoming workaholics versus people now who think about things differently. Baby boomers tend to expect many aspects of work to be understood without discussing. And so these are the folks that are like, why don't you know how to do this? Well, no one ever taught me how to do this. How am I supposed to know that? That conversation happens a lot. And then also very big on job loyalty. And these are folks who generally work for the same company all their life, got the pension, got the gold watch at 40 years or whatever. And they expect people to be loyal to their employer. Back in the days when employers tended to be much more loyal to their employees. So there was not, there have been several, there's been the pandemic, there's been several recessions since the baby boomers were the big stars in the workplace. And so many of us who are younger than baby boomers have a very different perspective of job loyalty. So Gen X, we tend to be comfortable with authority and we'll work hard if we understand why. So you're noticing some of the differences here. Traditionalists and baby boomers expect us to just be deferent to their opinion, whereas Gen X wants to know why. We're starting to see some changes here. And Gen X is also a group that saw most of our parents work their butts off for all of this time with 2 weeks of vacation a year. And then now they're retired, whereas we're saying, no, wait, we want to balance work and life a little bit more than that. We don't want to work at the same job for 40 years for a gold watch at the end. Millennials tend to have a perspective that respect must be earned. So now we have a big conflict here between the millennials and the baby boomers and traditionalists who expect deference to their opinions, and millennials who think, like, who are you? Just because you're older than me doesn't mean I immediately respect you. You need to earn respect from me. Very different perspective. Millennials are very big into social causes, and there's some evidence that millennials are moving away from organizations that are not socially conscious, like oil, tobacco, et cetera. Millennials tend to, not all, tend to be more technologically savvy. They were born with the internet and personal computers, and so they may be much more comfortable with that than some of the older generations, tend to be goal and achievement oriented, and they're much more desirous of feedback and positive work relationships. It's not like the traditionalists and the baby boomers who you go to work, you do your thing, maybe you have a drink after work, and then you go home to your family. Millennials want to be friends at work. They want to have relationships at work. They don't like tension between them and their bosses. And that's another big difference that you probably see in your workplace. And then finally, millennials often have, as I mentioned, a lot of side hustles, student loans. So they're always kind of conscious of keeping their eye on the bottom line. How much am I making versus how much am I spending? What am I getting out of this in a way that baby boomers and traditionalists didn't see the workplace? So when millennials are saying, I got student loans to pay off, I need to save for a house, I need this or that. Is this job worth it for me? That would be interpreted by traditionalists and baby boomers as being disloyal. Whereas millennials would say it's not being disloyal, it's just being rational. You didn't have to pay through the nose for your student loans. Because when baby boomers went to college, college was what, $2,000 a year or something. Very big difference. And then finally, the Gen Z group, little fear of power. As happens to the youngest generations here, digital natives very much into multitasking, and because they feel like they can work, look at their phone and look at a Zoom at the same time. And the older generations would say, no, you can't do that, or it's not going to, it feels disrespectful when you do that. So difference there. Gen Z tends to be fast decision makers. They tend to expect diversity. Which again can be a challenge with some of the older generations. They tend to be socially connected. And then, like millennials, they want feedback. They also have side hustles and student loans. So, again, you can see how when we talk about the generalities about the generations, things are set up to come to a head here because there are just some differences in how people see the workplace by generation that create challenges. So let's talk about workplace tensions as starting to apply this stuff. So there's three kind of major categories of workplace tensions. The first is values-based. and we've talked about this a little bit, each generation weighs the importance of a value differently. So, for example, baby boomers weigh loyalty very highly. Millennials and Gen Z tend to rank loyalty not very highly. So there can you can ha absolutely have some difference in there. Behavioral based. My example I love to include with this one is that if you come across a person who's 50 in their cubicle or at their desk and they're checking their phone, what kind of assumptions do you make about that? When I do this in a in an in-person room, people assume they are checking on their family. And if you change the age to someone who's 22, they assume they're just messing around on their phone or playing a game. That's the same behavior, looking at your phone at your desk, that is attributed very differently depending on what generation you're in. So those same behaviors can be interpreted quite differently. And then finally, there's some workplace tensions around identity, particularly around work identity. And I alluded to this earlier, where people who are traditionalists or baby boomers tend to identify themselves very heavily by their work. I am a lawyer. I am a social worker. I am a garbage man, like janitor. I am whatever, right? Whatever the part is that they play in the workplace, that is a big part of their identity. Whereas the younger groups, millennials and Gen Z, tend to have a much broader sense of their self-definition that could include their workplace as a small part of that. They may identify much more heavily as their sexual orientation or their ethnicity or their hometown or their nationality than they do the work that they do. And this creates a tension in the workplace. So here are some of the perceived differences that we come up with in the workplace. So first is traditional versus progressive. I know some of you mentioned baby boomers are often old school. So they may see themselves as old school, or they may see themselves as more progressive, but the younger generations view them as old school. They might also have a difference of perspective in, I'm not traditional, I'm just doing it correctly. Have you heard that one before? So this is the way it is done, right? So there's different perspectives there on how the generations may be different. And I kind of think of it as East Coast, West Coast in some ways. If I'm, you know, the same person who is a moderate or who is quite liberal if they live in the Southeast would be considered maybe moderate if they live in Seattle, right? So there's differences in how that's perceived. There's differences in earned versus entitled. To what extent someone earned where they're at versus feel entitled. So each group, no surprise here, feels like they earned it and the other group's entitled. So this happens where the older groups, traditionalists and baby boomers, would say, my house didn't even have a TV. We didn't have air conditioning growing up. I had to scrape and you know, earn my dues here. And you just walk in and expect to be a manager, right? You young people. On the other side, the young people are saying, wait a minute, college was $2,000 a year for you. Like it was almost free if you went to a state college. How is that considered earned? Also, all you had to do was work here and now you have a huge pension, whereas I have to earn and invest my money and look at my retirement in a way that you never had to. You also have Social Security, in which case might not exist by the time I retire, right? So there's that tension around who earned what and who's entitled to what. And if you grew up without television and air conditioning, then pretty much everyone's going to look entitled because I grew up with television and air conditioning, but my mom didn't. You know, my parents' generation was the first generation to really get those things. And so then that feels like I've been on easy street the whole time. High tech versus low tech. We're very aware of this. I work with an organization that tends to skew older. So it's a group for mid-level and senior level professionals. So kind of the youngest people in the group are in their 40s. And someone who's a young person who was helping us out said, maybe we could just use a QR code. Well, most of the older people in our group might not know how to use that or what that means, or even if they know what a QR code is, They might not have their banking account set up in a way to be able to pay via QR code. So we definitely have some high-tech, low-tech issues. Skilled versus unskilled communication is another place of intergenerational differences. No surprise here. We believe we are skilled at communicating, and the other person is unskilled at communicating, or the other generation isn't as skilled as we are. So this is a bias that comes up that affects how we communicate. There's a me versus we at work. So the baby boomers and traditionalists may have more of a sense of we in the workplace. All of us who work for this employer are a we. And that if you're doing your own thing or you're moving on to another job, then you're being selfish or you're being disloyal to the organization or you're being disloyal to your colleagues. Whereas junior, more junior people who are in the younger generations probably have a stronger sense of me because I still have to pay my bills. I need to do this. I feel like I'm not getting things handed to me. So I care about the organization, but I need to look out for me myself. And there's a difference of perspective there. And then, as I mentioned previously, the single versus multiple identities. Many people in the older generations are genuinely confused as to all the identities that younger generations have now, or parts of who they are. Again, their race, their ethnicity, their sexual orientation, their gender, their religion, et cetera, that are viewed as important by the younger groups when those may be things that just weren't talked about back then. And just weren't talked about also reminds us that there was civil rights and women's rights in between there, and definitely LGBT rights. And so, not talked about often meant those individuals weren't in the workplace or they weren't given position, they weren't allowed to have positions of authority. So then that creates some tension there as well. Okay, so workplace goals. Let's kind of come back to what are we trying to do in a workplace? These are the three main goals for any workplace in general, probably some exceptions, but in general. The first is engagement. Employee engagement is really important. And here's a definition. You want your employees at whatever level of the organization and whatever it is that you do, from janitor to support staff to administrative to CEO and everything in between, you want everybody to be engaged. Next, you want people to be good at performing their job duties. So their performance here is whatever you need to do. Cleaning, sorting, deciding, counseling, coaching, et cetera. Whatever the job performance is, you want those to be strong for each employee. And then finally, you want people to be able to get along with each other, which means conflict management. Because whenever you have people, you're going to have some kind of conflict. It's just how we roll. So your conflict management, you want them to be able to figure out task conflicts. I was told to do this, and yet there's this thing that is pressing, relationship conflicts, conflicts in procedures, and of course, intergenerational conflicts as well, which is what we're focusing on. So what can you do as a manager? And I'll add, not just as a manager, but as an employee, as someone who is as a grown person working in an organization, what can you do to try to make things better? Here's a set of items that you can do, and we'll come back to these in a little bit. So first is observing. And if this is your first, if this presentation is your first real introduction to intergenerational issues and differences, you may start noticing intergenerational conflict everywhere after this. Just observe and see what's happening that might be attributable to intergenerational issues or differences. The second is if you're involved in a situation, acknowledge that it's possible. This could be an intergenerational conflict related to me versus we, related to assumptions or value differences or behavior interpretations or so on. Acknowledge that it's possible so that you can talk about it. Share information when you can about what's happening that could be related to these differences in values or behavior identity. Try to diffuse the conflict and emphasize where people are on the same page, and then teach specific strategies if you can and if that's within your bailiwick there. So here are some general strategies about managing intergenerational conflict, and we'll get into more specific ones in a moment. So first is, these are things that people do naturally to try to manage this conflict. The first is they focus on their communication style. They flex their tone of their message, the communication medium, or their language usage. So kind of simple answer here is, I work on a project where most people communicate via Slack, but the older generations much prefer email and don't check Slack. So then that creates some challenge. So whenever anyone really wants to get the attention of the senior boss who's a baby boomer, we send that person an email. Some people really like getting phone calls. It's rare to find people who aren't comfortable with email these days, but some people really prefer phone calls. Performing proficiently. Some people feel that their performance, especially if they're the only one in their generation in that office or in that group, that their performance is representative of everyone in their group. So if you have a group of people who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and then one 23-year-old, that 23-year-old probably feels pretty judged and tries to do their best to make sure that people don't think that because of their off performance, that reflects poorly on all Gen Zers. People try to be visible. They try to share what they're doing to make sure that other people can see the good they're doing in the workplace. Some people try to manage information so that they control their image, particularly when they feel that they are representative of their generation. Some people focus on protecting their needs and making sure their needs are met in an organization and in an interaction. And then finally, some people can either remove themselves by quiet quitting is a thing where they just kind of disengage from what's happening, or they could walk away or ignore other things that are happening because they just don't want to manage the intergenerational conflict. And I've seen it happen. I've seen a lot of these things happen. Okay, so I have some scenarios here for some quick discussion. So for the first scenario, here's what we have. 45-year-old manager is frustrated with their new mid-20s employee. The new employee keeps offering new ideas and making suggestions for how to improve the workplace, and the manager feels like the employee should focus on their work. So, excuse me, what generations are these individuals? Let's start with that. Can you put that in the chat? What generation is the manager, and what generation is the new employee? Gen X and Gen Z. Absolutely. Thank you. And then what are they likely thinking? What's going on here? What are their values and perspectives? The manager is probably thinking, I'm the authority. Yeah, just do your work. Definitely a sense of earned versus entitled, but the manager thinks, I know what I'm doing. I've been here. So, like, why do you keep making suggestions for how to make things better? And probably, what do you know? And yeah, stay in your lane, right? What is the junior person thinking? Let's improve things, right? Let's make this better. Let's make this more democratic. Yeah, absolutely. They're thinking, I'm doing the right thing by trying to help everyone, by pointing out things that aren't working, and trying to make them better. And they may or may not be as diplomatic as they could, as is possible, but they are trying to make things better. So then how can this situation be diffused? If both people are trying to do the right thing generally, how can the tension be diffused? Yeah, more collaborative. Yeah, what would that look like? Understanding and viewing the situation from each other's perspective. Yeah, that's really helpful. The manager can maybe not be as sensitive to feeling attacked by the junior person, and the junior person might be able to tone it down a little bit and learn a little more before making suggestions. And yeah, active listening is great. Listening with curiosity, acknowledging that they're both acting the way they're acting because they care about their work. Absolutely. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Fantastic. Let's go to, okay, so here is another scenario. 60-year-old manager and staff in their 30s and 40s are not getting along. So the manager prefers in-person meetings, which the staff find unproductive. And the staff are on their phones and their laptops during the meetings, which makes the manager feel disrespected. You seen this happen before? I know I have. So first question, what are the generations here? Right? Baby boomer and between millennials and Gen X. Yep, absolutely. And what are the perspectives of each party here? What's the manager thinking? What are the staff thinking? Right. Each group thinks the other is wasting their time. And the manager is probably thinking, this is the way we've always done it. And we've always had in-person meetings and people should be listening. And the junior people are probably thinking, yes, this could have been an email. This isn't very efficient and you're not managing the meeting very well. So since you're wasting my time, I'm going to try to get something else done, right? We can see both of those perspectives. And sometimes it's hard as the manager to run a meeting that's really efficient, and it's hard to shift the situation. So how could this be diffused? Right, both think they have important work to do. Hybrid, or every other meeting is in person or Zoom? Yeah. Great. Great. What else could happen? Making a rule of no phones. Short meetings. Oh, I love it. I love it. Conversation about the efficiency is beautiful. Yeah. Having a conversation non-defensively about how could we make our meetings more effective? What would we want to see? Yeah. And then finding a way to work in the middle and see how they can be streamlined. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Great ideas. Okay. So we have some recommendations here. So I'm starting with recommendations for communicating with millennials and Gen X, or sorry, millennials and Gen Z, if you're a baby boomer or Gen X. So we're going to start with, if you are on the older end of that scale, like me and many others here, how do we communicate with the younger end of that scale? And don't worry, younger end, your turn's coming up. So let's start with delete your negative attitude and negative comments about their generation. So I just noticed someone in the chat said to use emojis in the meeting. I think that's a great idea. That will definitely communicate clearly with everyone. So deleting your negative attitude and negative comments. So saying things like, you weren't even alive when I started working here, or how old are you? Like, not helpful. Not helpful at all. Jokes about using an abacus or stone tablets. You can make those with your friends, but not at work. Negative comments about the whole generation of the other person. Definitely not a thing. Not helpful in a workplace. So second, you can increase organizational openness. So I know we talked about how the Gen X and baby boomers and traditionalists generally expect that people just do what they're asked to do. All right, that can be fine. That could be your expectation. However, if you would like to get more out of your younger colleagues, it would be helpful to explain the why. Help them learn. Help them learn why things have been done this way, and then maybe ask them some questions about how things could be done differently, but help them understand. And I see some of the comments seeing their enthusiasm for change as positive, that it is coming from a good place. Explaining some of the differences. When I explain billing, for example, that in the olden days, everything was on a paper chart. And in big places, you had to request a paper chart before you could see the client. That's a big deal. That was kind of a little bit before my time, but some places still had that going on. But now people can just look at it on their computers and it's so much easier. Not everywhere, but some places. So understanding, here's how far we've come. We're working together to help bring us to the next level. Clarify expectations and communicate feedback frequently. So we talked about how millennials and Gen Z want feedback. And if you are a baby boomer or Gen X or traditionalist, you might say, they shouldn't need feedback. Nobody ever gave me feedback. Okay, that may be, Maybe they shouldn't need it. And I'm sorry no one ever gave you feedback, but people want feedback. Give them feedback. Do you want them to improve their performance? If you do, give feedback. And knowing that they really want to do the right thing, clarifying your expectations and giving them feedback doesn't all have to be positive, but letting them know this is working, this is not working. You're doing this great. Here's something you could do differently that would be helpful. They really want that. So give it to them. Give it to them. Great. Doesn't hurt you at all and helps them a lot. Engage people who are millennials and Gen Z to help craft the culture. We talked about how millennials and Gen Z are really into having a positive, low stress workplace. They want people to get along and be together. And so engage them. What could we do to improve the culture here? That makes it really bet easier for everyone to get along. Oversee teamwork. So I think a lot of people, certainly as Gen X, teamwork is tough when you've got like middle school projects, and you end up doing the work and somebody else doesn't pull their share. The younger generations, I guess I'm including myself in that one, but Gen X, Millennials, Gen Z, very sensitive about fairness. So if there's teamwork that you're overseeing, make sure that things are productive and fair. What that means, it doesn't have mean you have to be overseeing every moment of every day, but what I do recommend is that you check in with folks. How is this team project going? Do you feel like it's fair? Do you feel like you've got too much work, not enough work, or just right? And then when you're working with your team, do the same thing. How's your workload? One of the things I like to do with my team is say, how's your stress? If one is you're kicking back with your feet on the desk, and 10 is you're really about to lose it because you're so stressed, where's your stress level? And then generally, I like people to be around a 7 or an 8. If they're not stressed, if they're not doing anything, then give them more work. And if they're at a 9 or a 10, that's too much. And let's figure out how we can make this happen. So there's some definite ways there to try to make sure people aren't too overwhelmed and that the work feels fair. And then finally, provide millennials and Gen Z with an opportunity to pursue their passions within their work. And again, I can hear it. Gen X and baby boomers, nobody gave me a chance to pursue my passions. Yes, that sucks, doesn't it? That's really bad. If there's a way you can help someone pursue their passions, help them. Maybe they want to really work with a certain client group, or maybe they're really passionate about connecting with people in the community, or whatever it is. Find out what are you really passionate about, and then see what you can do. You don't have to completely change the job description, but if you have an opportunity, if you can, mention, hey, you mentioned you're really excited about this. I have an opportunity. Would you be interested in that? Super. Let's talk about it. Let's work on it. Okay, so those are the general summary of recommendations for the older groups, baby boomers and Gen X, to communicate with millennials and Gen Z. All right, now it's time for the opposite. So if you are millennial and Gen Z, how do you talk to those of us who are in the older groups? So first, you might recognize this one, delete your negative attitude and your negative comments about their generation. It is not helpful to call somebody an old fogey or to say that like they're never going to change or whatever. Not helpful. Delete your negative comments and your negative attitude. Second, ask them to teach you something. People love this. And how ask them, it's kind of like asking your grandparent about, tell me what it was like in the olden days, but tell me how things used to work here. Tell me, how did it come to be like this? A lot of times people really, really appreciate that. Repeat back expectations so you're sure you understand. Has happened to me a lot at first with millennials and Gen Z, where I would give an assignment and say, do you understand? And they'd say, yes. And then they'd come back later and say, no, I didn't understand. So get in the habit of repeating back what you think you understand about the assignment and saying, did I get it right? Is that it? So ideally, you can get some feedback right there in the moment about, are you understanding what they're saying? And remember, if you're not understanding what they're saying, it doesn't mean it's your fault necessarily. It means that it's between the two of you. Maybe they're not explaining it well. So if you say, okay, what I understand is you're asking me to do X, Y, and Z, and they're like, no, I'm asking you to do A, B, and C, then okay, let's try this again. Let's work on it. I want us to understand. So that's really helpful. Pay attention to politics. This is a challenge that comes up a lot with younger generations that I see. And again, part of why I write so much about millennials, especially I wrote a book on workplace politics. A lot of times, younger people in general, which includes me, however many years ago, and younger people in the workplace now, are not sufficiently attentive to all the politics that are going on, to the whole game that's being played, where they don't even realize there's a game being played. So some of this can be who used to work with who used to be married to who has a particular thing that's always their thing, who's just grumpy all the time, who is good to go to if you need help, who is not good to go to if you need help. Who can help you problem solve versus who is going to try to shame you if you bring a problem without a solution, right? Paying attention to that is really important. And that's another place where it's good for the younger generations to ask the older generations about politics, about how things work, and about these personal different ways that people interact and what the historical aspects are. I had a boss when I was first getting started who was very not helpful in a lot of ways, but one of the ways he was very helpful is he knew all the politics. He knew who was married to who used to be married to who, and how that impacted. And he would tell these stories, maybe in a gossipy way, but it was enormously helpful for me to understand the politics of all that happened before I showed up. Because my perspective was, oh, okay, I'm here. I'm just going to take everything at face value. And oh, no. There's so much water under the bridge that I did not understand. And it was really helpful to have someone who at least partially could help me understand those politics. So pay attention to politics, understand that there are a lot of dynamics going on that you may not understand, and ask about it. See what you can find out. Even if it's as simple as, hey, I noticed in that meeting we just got out of that there was a lot of tension between these two people. Can you help me understand what was going on that I wasn't understanding? Like you're picking up on it, but you may not understand it. Ask questions when you don't understand. Again, it comes out a lot where people they say they understand and then they come back and they're like, actually, I don't. If you don't understand, ask as soon as you know you don't understand, and not the day the project's due or after the project's due, and say, oh, well, but you never explained it to me well enough. So ask questions. It doesn't make you look dumb, it makes you look smart. And then be willing to have the difficult conversations. There's some great books on difficult conversations. There's training through UCLA on difficult conversations, but be willing to say, help me understand. Can I talk about our relationship? Let's talk about how things are working in the office. And if you would like me to do this, here's a way that could work better. And be willing to have that conversation, understanding that the people who are older aren't necessarily better at having those conversations, in part because they might not have had the opportunity to have them, or they might not value that, or they might not have that practice. And then finally, for both groups here, don't take it personally. It's not necessarily, it's almost rarely about you personally. It's more about what's going on with that other person. And I always say it's a wonder we can get anything done at work, because everyone is bringing all of their childhood issues and mommy and daddy issues and everything else, and the argument they had that morning. Everybody's bringing their stuff to work and working it out with each other. It's not personal. And if it feels personal, talk with someone you trust about how to not take it personally. It is not personal. Okay, so coming back to these about what you can do as a manager, what you can do as a person in a workplace, whether you're a supervisor or not, observe what's going on. Acknowledge that it could be intergenerational conflict. Share information. Feel free to say, I went to this training. I wonder if we're seeing things differently because of this. What do you think? And then try to find a way to diffuse the conflict and emphasize the ways in which you're together on the same page. And then, if you can, teach specific strategies that we talked about. So here's our summary about significant differences. And then there's ways that as consulting psychologists or as managers or as individuals in the workplace that you have unique skills that you can help people with. I have some references here. You'll see these on the slides. And then we have about 5 minutes for questions. And I will say thank you so much for your involvement. I love the chat. I love all the pieces of information that you shared, and thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you.